Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Claire Roth, sitting in for Ann this week. Last week came another grim reminder of the impact of the pandemic on the economy. In the second quarter, U.S. GDP fell by nearly $2 trillion. That's the worst quarter on record, wiping out more than 5 years of growth. Economists are looking to a July jobs report that's coming out Friday to see how a second spike in cases may have impacted unemployment. June's unemployment rate of 11.1% means the economy has lost almost all of the jobs it added since the Great Recession in 2008. Here to help us understand the scope of these losses is Loretta Mester. She's the president and chief executive officer of the Federal Reserve Bank in Cleveland, where she participates in the formulation of U.S. monetary policy, and she's a member of Governor DeWine's Economic Advisory Board. Welcome to the program, Loretta.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here with you.
Absolutely. So going back to March and April, after Ohio shut down, the economy was pretty much in free fall. Help us understand how bad it got.
So it was a real shutdown of the whole economy. So of course, you know, you'd expect all activity to be constrained. There was really the essential employees and essential businesses stayed open, but everyone was told to stay home for a good reason. It was a public health crisis, and it was really intended so that we could, you know, make sure that we could put in place a healthcare system that wasn't going to be overburden, that we could actually, you know, get some handle on the virus cases. So essentially, it was different than a typical downturn is that we turned off the economy. And there were good reasons to do it. But of course, turning off the economy had a big impact on economic activity, on unemployment. And we're seeing the repercussions of that play forward. The virus is really driving things here. And our ability to control the virus is going to be very key into how the economy is going to fare as we go forward.
Absolutely. You know, we turned off the economy, but it's not like a computer. You can't just turn it back on and it starts from where it left off. So we're 5 months in. How are we doing here in Ohio?
Yeah. So, you know, it was interesting that, you know, Ohio is sort of faring the way I think the U.S. is faring. Mm. You know, we had the shutdown, and of course, many, many businesses, you know, were affected by that. And then in May and June, as Governor DeWine, you know, had a thoughtful plan of reopening, as things were able to reopen, we did see a pickup in activity. And in fact, you know, we've been doing a lot of reconnaissance with local businesses to see how things are going. And early on, you know, when things started to become reopened, we were being told like things are actually picking up sooner and better than we thought they would. Not to say that we're anywhere near back to where we were in February, but that things were looking like things, activity was picking up. People were able to re-engage a bit in the economy. But what's happened in the last few weeks, of course, is with the increase in the virus, we've seen a change in tone from all of our contacts. And we're actually seeing it now in some of the high frequency data that we get. Like we track debit card and credit card transactions, and that's showing a slowing in the pace of spending. You know, 55% of our business contacts now tell us that they're meaningfully altering plans in response to the increase in cases. So, and that is important because some of those altering of plans is reducing employment or wages or canceling or postponing planned capital expenditures. So, you know, we've already seen, you know, more, you know, manufacturing was already hurt. A lot of the manufacturers tell us they don't have orders, you know, very thin orders going forward. So this is, you know, job one is to try to get the virus better controlled to sort of bend that back down so that people feel safe and businesses feel confident to you know, that demand's going to be there so they can increase their activity. So,
well, and that was what I was going to ask. I'm curious as to whether this is tied to the virus or tied to policy response or tied to how they imagine the economy will go with more cases. We pay a lot of attention to the policy response from the state and federal government, but is this kind of a case where no matter what the federal government does, if cases are high, the economy will be bad?
Not really. So there's a number of things that we can do. I think there's personal things that every individual can do to help control the virus, like mask wearing, very important, hygiene, social distancing. So that if we can do that and all of us commit to doing that, that then will help control the virus, and then that will impact the economy in a positive way. Similarly, policy has been, I think, quite important to get us through this bridge till we can actually get to a more sustainable recovery. So, for example, the actions the federal government took, right, this, you know, the payments to households
from the CARES Act,
extended unemployment benefits, all of that was crucial, right? And we saw an important impact of that in getting us, you know, over, you know, as we kind of emerge from the shutdown. The Federal Reserve has taken policy action as well to make sure that the financial markets can function, and so that credit can flow to households and businesses and small businesses, so that they can sort of have like funding to keep going. So I think the policy response is very important. I think its multi-prong approach is very important. And what we've learned is that controlling a virus is difficult, and we're just going to need to be all in for longer till we get to a more sustainable recovery.
You mentioned the Fed's response. Tell us a little bit more about the actions that the Fed has taken to try to mitigate the huge impact of this pandemic on our economy.
Yeah, so we've been doing a number of things. Firstly, you know, very important that the financial markets have enough liquidity to function. And early on, of course, as everyone was sort of realizing that this pandemic was a huge, was going to have huge impacts, there is really a flight to try to become much more liquid. And we saw that disrupting financial markets, and in particular, the important treasury security market, which really underlies all the financial markets. So we made sure that we were doing things to make sure that market had enough liquidity. Similarly, we have a set of tools that have been authorized by the US Treasury, which we call 13-3 facilities. And those are really meant to backstop financial markets and to get credit so that it can flow to households and businesses who were having difficulty getting credit from their normal sources. And so those things, you've heard of the Main Street Lending Program and the PPP Liquidity Program, they're really intended to get credit, and it's credit from the Fed. We're not allowed to make direct grants, but we can make credit flow easier to households and businesses.
So people can still get loans during this time.
Basic underlying policy rate as well to add accommodation so that there's very easy financial conditions, not easy for people who are out there struggling, but we're doing what we can to make sure that the financial markets continue to function and that credit continues to flow.
Beyond the ability to get loans, I'm curious if you can help explain for the average person who hears financial markets and thinks, well, the liquidity of financial markets, what's that got to do with the tea in China? You know, how does that impact me personally and my, you know, my finances? Help us understand why that's important for the average consumer.
Right. So, I mean, if you think about your debt, I mean, a lot of consumers have debt, right? If we lower interest rates, right, that helps in terms of, you know, your own financial situation. A lot of small businesses have debt as well. They need to borrow to meet cash flow needs, right? If interest rates are lower and these programs allow financial markets to function, they're able to do that. A seizing up in the banking system or broader financial markets on top of a pandemic would just make things much, much worse. So we have to do what we can do at the Fed to make sure that markets are functioning so that people can borrow, that the markets continue to function, that you have a credit card, you can use it, and so that you're able to sort of do the everyday things that you typically do with your banks or your non-bank lenders in the case that you're at a non-bank lender. So that it's very important that those markets keep functioning. But your point is a good one in the sense that it really is the direct funding from the federal government, right, who is the entity that can make grants that's going to be needed. For a lot of firms and a lot of households, adding more debt isn't the answer. It really is. They're going to need resources, right, to get them through this period of the shutdown, the period of the reopening, till we get to what will look like the typical kind of recovery. We're just in a very, very deep hole right now. A lot of people are out of work, as you pointed out. The improvement we've seen over the past couple of months has been very good, but we're still very, very much in the midst of things. This is early days in some sense. It seems like it's gone on a long time, but it really is early days. And it's just going to take a lot to get us back to a good economy again. Mm.
Our guest today is President Loretta Mester of the Cleveland Federal Reserve Bank. We're talking about the economy, the pandemic's record-shattering effects, and what recovery may look like. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 614-292-8513 or send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. Loretta, you mentioned interest rates, and the benchmark interest rate from the Fed is already so low. It's almost near zero. You've mentioned some of the things the Fed's done so far in terms of loan programs, but is there anything else in, you know, the Fed's bag of tricks, so to speak, that they can really do to help the U.S. economy recover?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we do have tools that we used when we were recovering from the Great Recession. And you remember that was centered on the financial crisis, and then it turned into a deep recession as well. So those things, once you've brought your interest rate down to essentially zero, those things include making sure that everyone out in the economy, households, the public, businesses, financial markets know that you're planning to keep interest rates low for as long as you need to before we get back to, and of course the Fed's goals are given to us by Congress, maximum employment and price stability. So that's one. That's a powerful tool, because if people know that you're planning to keep very accommodative financial conditions for a long time until they're needed, then they're more willing to re-engage and to move forward. So that's one of our tools. We call it forward guidance. The other thing we did was we bought longer-term assets, both Treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities. And people might say, well, what did that do? Well, it put downward pressure on longer-term interest rates. And of course, longer-term interest rates are some of the ones that are more related to things like mortgages. So people enjoyed lower mortgage rates because some of the actions the Fed took. And those two tools have been tried. We used them before, and they're still in our toolkit. So that's some of the things we can do. And we're also, you know, continually looking at whether there are issues in financial markets where another 13-3 facility we could set up to help. So recently, the Main Street Lending Facility has opened for business. And, you know, there's a part of that which is focused on nonprofits. So there's still actions there. That if, you know, we see a need, we have the ability to do more there as well.
I mentioned that really stark number, that $1.8 trillion dip, the GDP falling 9.5% in the second quarter of this year. And I'm hoping you can help us contextualize that compared to other countries, because, of course, we're all handling COVID right now, but some countries are handling it differently than others. Have they seen in Europe, for instance, the same sort of stark drop off of their GDPs?
Yeah, this is a global pandemic, and it has global implications for all the economies. So, you know, the U.S., the trough, I think, will be in the second quarter. We just saw that big, big, big drop, as you pointed out, 33% decline, right? We are going to see some recovery in the third quarter and fourth quarter and then going forward. What that looks like, it's really going to depend on how the virus goes and whether, you know, we have treatments and vaccines and those kind of investments showing that we can control the virus and re-engage in activity. So we have other kinds of illnesses and we engage in activity. So if this one can become under control, we can re-engage in activity and feel like confident enough that we can emerge. So it's not hopeless. And in fact, we're going to see better numbers in the third quarter just because there has been some reopening. But the point is, sometimes don't look at growth rates, look at levels, which I know in your intro you did, which I think is the right way to look at it. It's just going to take us long to get out of it. But there's hope. It's not that it's hopeless. We can do things that will help. Like we, each individual can do things that will help control the spread of the virus.
And of course, government policy has an impact on that as well, because some of those European countries haven't seen the loss of growth that we have, at least not in the same capacity or to the same extent.
Yeah, I mean, certain countries have done, you know, they had a different, you know, response. Countries that early on were testing and did contact tracing and were able to set that up quickly and get testing out there, I think you typically had a better response. I would say, though, that it's also, you know, what shows the difficulty is even countries that did that recently have seen caseloads go up a bit. So, you know, I think it's good to be humble a bit about the virus and continue to work on things that can help its control. But again, we have to look to the health, public health experts. And I think that's important. The Cleveland Clinic really points out the value of mask wearing. I mean, I think their latest read of the research says that if 95% of the public wore masks when they were out in public areas, we probably would see a decrease of 40 to 50,000 deaths from the COVID virus. So again, there is a lot of things that we can do and all do, right, to help the situation, right? But I grant you that, you know, increased testing, increased contact tracing, working on therapeutics, and, you know, working ultimately in getting a vaccine that can be distributed countrywide, those are the first order of business here. And they're going to be very important in this.
Loretta Mester is my guest this hour. She's the president and chief executive officer of the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland. We're talking about the economy and possible recovery. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 614-292-8513. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Claire Roth in for Ann today. We'll be back in just a moment.
I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown, and we are the hosts of Snollygoster, WOSU's podcast all about politics in Ohio.
Each week, we chat about what the shrewd politicians at the State House are up to and how national politics affects us here at home.
Find out why listeners have called us a weekly must-listen. For a lighthearted yet in-depth look at Ohio politics, subscribe to Snollygoster wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Claire Roth, sitting in for Ann Fisher today. We're talking about the economy. In Congress, lawmakers are still working to hash out a new stimulus package as jobless Americans face their first week without $600 in federal help. Meanwhile, analysts are waiting for Friday's jobs report, hoping it'll provide clues on the strength of the economic recovery and show the possible effect of a second spike of coronavirus cases. Still with us is Loretta Mester, the president and chief executive officer of the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland. She's also a member of Governor DeWine's Economic Advisory Board. Thanks for being with us, Loretta.
Thank you.
I'm curious if you can talk to us a little bit about what we should be expecting from this jobs report on Friday. Economic analysts are anticipating it with a fair amount of trepidation. What are you expecting to see?
Yeah, I mean, I understand why it's hard to predict what that's going to look like, because we've talked to a lot of businesses in Ohio, and they've all told us that, you know, they are becoming much more cautious on bringing people back onto their payrolls. And we're sort of starting to see that, like the initial claims for unemployment insurance had gone up, started going up in recent weeks. So I think that we'll see a positive number there. It's not going to be a negative, but I think the speed at which we saw the improvement over the last couple of months is going to be tempered. And, you know, almost every contact we've talked to said that this increase, the recent increase in cases, really has tempered their their view on the economy. And we've seen that over time as well as things have gone on. You know, early on, firms thought this would last 6 months and then we'd be back to reopening and then actually expanding again. Now, majority of the firms we survey are saying it's going to be at least a year or even longer before they get back to where they might have been in February. So again, I think that, you know, we'll see an increase in jobs in the report, but I can't predict how many. And I do think that we're going to see the effects of the recent surge in the virus eventually showing up in our statistics on employment and activity.
In June, in a speech that you gave, you said that you anticipated the second quarter of 2020 would be the largest decline on record. You were right. It was. We found that out last week. Are there any encouraging signs, any reasons for hope that these numbers might be going back up?
Well, I mean, we're going to see the third quarter and the fourth quarter. You know, we have reopened the economy. Now, some places and some states have had to pull back some of those things that they allowed to reopen because of the surge, but that we don't know whether that's temporary or whether we can get things back under control and then things are going to pick up. So we're going to see some increase in activity through the end of the year. What I think though is that the level of GDP will still be down. So, you know, it's going to look like, you know, and down like compared to what it was at the end of last year. So, you know, my forecast is, you know, probably down 6%. Compared to the level we were at the end of last year. So again, recovery, but not back to the level that we were at the end of last year. So the hole was still deep and the hole was big, even though we're making progress. The progress that we've seen on some of the public health statistics in terms of therapeutics and vaccines are promising. But again, we have to be a little humble about it because, you know, if a vaccine does get developed, distributing it out to the country is going to take some time. So again, we'll see improvement, I think, but I think it's just, you know, we're in a deep hole. It's going to take time. And we really need to do all we can to build this bridge to this place where the recovery really is sustainable going forward. And that's why I think both monetary policy, but even more importantly, fiscal policy is going to be really crucial to the outcome here.
You talk about building this bridge. I think that a lot of us think of the other side as post-vaccine, right? And I'm curious, even once we get there, even once we are post-vaccine, economy can operate as it did before, how long do you think it's going to be until we get back to where the U.S. was in February? Because rebuilding takes time.
Well, if you're just looking like level of GDP, it's going to take a couple years, I think, that we can actually be there. But I also think that what the new normal is not going to be the same as where we were before. Mm. I think there's a lot of things that we've learned over this time, like remote work arrangements. A lot of firms that weren't doing that before have by necessity had to do it, and they've learned how to do it better. So I think there's going to be a lot of longer run structural changes. And that's part of the issue of why it's going to take time to get the economy back. There's going to be firms that go out of business that aren't going to be able to survive. There's going to be people that probably need to locate new firms that will hire them or even have to switch industries. So those kinds of structural things just take a long time. And that's why if you look at what the Fed has said, you know, our belief is that interest rates are going to be low for the next 3 years or so. And that's the end of our forecast horizon. So we've said that. And I think, and I'm consistent with that. I think it's just going to take a lot of help from monetary policy and fiscal policy to sort of ease that along. A lot of people lost their jobs through no fault of their own, of course, right? It's just that industries that have a lot of contact, like hotel industries and travel, air travel, right? It's just those kind of things. Getting that activity back is just going to take quite a while.
We're talking about the economy today on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Claire Roth filling in for Ann. If you would like to join the conversation with questions or comments, give us a call at 614-292-8513. You can also send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. Our guest today, President Loretta Mester of the Cleveland Federal Reserve Bank. And joining us now is Bill Lafayette. He's the owner of Regionomics, a Columbus-based consulting firm focused on community-level economic and workforce issues. And he's been actively studying the Ohio and Columbus economies for more than 20 years. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Claire. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. So we've been talking a lot about unemployment, but you've said that unemployment may be a little bit more slippery than we think as far as using it as a benchmark. Help us understand why unemployment might be understated right now.
Well, unemployment rates always understate the level of pain, and they especially understate the level of pain when things get rough as they are now. The way that unemployment is counted is you have to have actively been in the job market searching for the last 30 days or you do not exist. And what we saw as the pandemic took hold and as the economy went into its medically induced coma was that the labor force declined markedly. And so those people who were counted in February but were not counted in March and April obviously still existed, and most of them probably still wanted jobs, but they weren't counted in the official number.
Mm. Loretta, what are the economic indicators you're paying the most attention to as we go through this time?
Yeah, so I agree that the unemployment rate is understating how bad things are. So that's certainly, we're looking at a lot of labor market statistics, but we're also looking at some of the more frequent, higher frequency indicators because they give you a good read on, you know, whether activity is picking up and that whether people feel that they can engage. So in addition to our own surveys, we're looking at those. In fact, you know, the Cleveland Fed has been doing a daily nationwide survey of consumers, and that's giving us a lot of insight into their attitudes about whether they think things are improving, whether they feel comfortable going out and about. And so we're looking at that. But the labor market indicators are key here. And a span of them, in addition to just different measures on activity, mobility statistics that show whether people are actually going out and engaging in shopping and those kind of statistics. So there's a lot of real good work going on in surveys and other measures that are going to be more forward-looking than some of the data that lags aren't going to show these turns and conditions.
We're talking about the economy today on All Sides with Ann Fisher with Bill Lafayette, the owner of Regionomics, and Loretta Mester, president of the Cleveland Federal Reserve Bank. We saw such a dramatic loss of jobs in such a short time frame back in March, and that, of course, came with the intensity of the shutdown. I'm wondering if we'll see a subtler loss of jobs as restrictions like the governor's liquor order trickle in. You know, it's not a medically induced coma, as Bill said now. It's more maybe dialysis or getting consistent chemo treatments in a hospital bed.
I definitely agree that it's going to take a long time for us to get back. And the liquor order and so forth is definitely going to have an impact. The hospitality industry in general has really been the tail wagging the dog of job losses. Less than 10% of the economy accounted for more than a third of the total loss. Restaurants and hotels and arts and entertainment lost half of their employment in 2 months. Just staggering.
You know, and the real unfortunate thing about this is that it's the people that are most vulnerable that are bearing the brunt of this. So if you look at where the majority of the job losses have been, right, they've been in leisure and hospitality and retail, and those are the lower paying
segments of the economy. So that's the other thing. It's people of color, right? Communities of color, women, low wage jobs, and they typically don't have the wherewithal. They're more vulnerable. And so that's the other tragedy about this, is that it's really disproportionate.
Well, and of course, that suffering is terrible in the short term, but it also has longer term effects. Economic research shows if temporary job losses become more persistent, the loss of skills and re-entry to the workforce can impose lasting damage to people and to the economy. So how do we interrupt that pattern?
We have to. Oh, I'm sorry. Go on.
No, go ahead.
Bill, you start, then Loretta.
Okay. I think that it's really, really important that we have really aggressive outreach to the community at large, educating them on the resources that are out there for training, for financial support, the kind of work that the Ohio Means Jobs Centers do, and the online Ohio Means Jobs site is really, really important. That can give people insight into new careers that they might want to consider.
Loretta?
Yeah, so I agree with that. In fact, you know, the other thing is that we have to be cognizant of that in some of these communities, it's even hard to get online. They just don't have Wi-Fi services.
Right.
Dave Mengenhard, you know, is running, basically supports labor market help. He's actually opened his Cleveland downtown office because of this issue, so that people can come in physically, because it's so difficult. So again, you're right that a lot of these are longstanding problems, and the COVID crisis has really shined a bright light on some of these issues. Education, I agree with Bill, education is going to be key here, so that people can retrain, and we need to support that as a country to allow that those kind of longer run transitions to occur.
We're talking go ahead, Bill.
We really need to address the problem of internet access, broadband access. The cost is just way too high, and the availability, especially in parts of rural Ohio, simply is not there. That needs to be a huge priority.
We're talking with Bill Lafayette, the owner of Regionomics, a Columbus-based consulting firm, and with President Loretta Mester of the Cleveland Federal Reserve Bank. And President Mester, we have an email from John. He writes, does the Federal Reserve have enough information to tell us which is better for the economy, partially shutting down to 70% of activity, but stringing that out for a year from the pandemic, or biting the bullet, doing a complete shutdown for 2 months? What would cause more borrowing from the government?
Yeah, so I mean, there's different strategies that different countries have used even to address this. I think shutting down has huge, you know, implications, because as you said early on, shutting down, coming back out of it, it's not like turning the light back on. So I guess my preferred path would be do all we can to get the viruses under control so that we can do targeted, right, and risk-based shutdowns where needed. So rather than shut down the whole economy, if we see cases rising, then we can sort of ratchet back some of the activity. But again, I think we can all do our part by just following best practices. I'm always thinking about, you know, after 9/11, the TSA put a lot of requirements on us to fly, and everyone grumbled at first, but now we're all doing it. And I think of this as the same thing. We can all do things and get used to doing what we need to do, get the virus under control until a vaccine can be well distributed. And I think that's probably the path we should be on. So really think hard about doing all we can to keep things going. But we have to do it in a safe manner.
Before we let you go, I'm wondering, once the coronavirus abates, we have a vaccine, we're getting back to our new normal, what steps does America need to take to rebuild the resilience of the economy and to help us prepare for the next recession, whenever that may come?
Yeah, that's a broad question. I mean, I think some of the things that we did after the Great Recession actually made the economy more resilient to this. So banks, for example, were much better capitalized going into this downturn than they were the last time. And so those improvements in the financial system, I think, are paying off. But again, I'm going to go back to what Bill said. There's a lot of structural things that COVID has identified for us and shown a light on. We kind of knew they existed, but we didn't really feel, I guess, compelled to address. And I think some of those are inequality issues, the lack of broadband internet access, and all those things, making sure that firms don't take on too much debt. All those things can help get us prepared for the next one, as well as understanding more about public health issues. And making sure that people have access to good health care.
Loretta Mester, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Bill Lafayette, the CEO and owner of Regionomics, a Columbus-based consulting firm. Thank you for being with us. He's sticking with us for the third segment of All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Claire Roth filling in for Ann today. If you want to weigh in on the economy or have some questions for Bill, give us a call at 614-292-8513. You can also email allsides@wosu.org. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Claire Roth sitting in for Ann this week. We're talking about the economy, how the pandemic has wiped out more than a decade of job growth, created double-digit unemployment, and brought layoffs and business closures to Central Ohio. Still with us is Bill Lafayette, the owner of Regionomics, a Columbus-based consulting firm focused on community-level economic and workforce issues. Thanks for being with us, Bill.
Thank you, Claire.
And joining us now from Columbus Business First is Eleanor Kennedy, an assistant managing editor for that publication. Welcome, Eleanor.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we have heard about these closures, this economic impact. Tell us a few of the examples of how it's hit Central Ohio.
Yeah, well, you know, in the past week or so alone, we've seen a big impact on the retail industry, which is obviously a big part of the economy here. You have DSW's parent company announcing that it's going to lay off about 1,000 people. L Brands, which obviously that company was already dealing with a decent amount of struggles and figuring out its sort of reinvention as it split between Victoria's Secret and Bath & Body Works. But the pandemic did not help things, and they're doing a round of layoffs. And then you've got another retail company, the parent company of Lane Bryant and Justice, closing stores, doing layoffs. So that sector has been hit pretty intensely. You're also seeing in the tourism sector, which never, you know, we talk a lot about businesses that reopened and now may have to shut back down and are concerned about that. You know, our hotels and our convention center have not yet been able to really, you know, reopen or ramp back up. So they're looking at furloughs turning into layoffs potentially. And then of course the restaurant industry is just so concerned about what's going to happen next for them.
Absolutely. And what's interesting about this pandemic, among many things, and about this this particular recession, I mean, is that it's hit sectors that are usually assumed safer in typical recessions. Education, for instance, healthcare, government jobs. Bill, are we seeing an impact there of these other industries that are usually kind of considered recession-proof?
Oh, yes. Well, even in the quintessential recession-proof industry, healthcare, which has been growing for a couple decades in Central Ohio without pause, all of a sudden we're seeing job losses there. And that may be surprising to some people, but just remember that all elective procedures were put on hold for a while. And so we've seen losses there. As a matter of fact, one of the things that's concerned me is that while Columbus, the 10-county metro area, declined about as much as the U.S. did during the job losses of March and April, it has not come back as fast as the national average. In contrast, Ohio's come back faster, which is unusual for the state.
Hmm. You know, Columbus has been seen as recession-proof more generally because of OSU, government jobs. Of course, we've got the seat of government here for the state, and insurance. Eleanor, do we think that that might be less true now in this kind of abnormal recession we're going through?
I mean, I certainly think the future of higher education is such a big question. You know, as of right now, OSU is planning to come back this fall in a hybrid form. And, you know, they've obviously got such size to sort of capitalize on. But I think a lot of colleges are going to be facing some tough decisions in the fall. And yeah, that's just a huge question there for higher ed, especially. It's just unknown right now, I think, what the long-term ramifications might be for that industry, which is so important to Columbus.
Absolutely. There haven't been a huge uptick in bankruptcies so far, but Bill, I'm wondering if you see that in our future.
I do. This has really been kind of a tale of two economies. The economy didn't totally shut down. There were a lot of jobs that transferred to work-from-home arrangements. Many of our larger employers simply sent their staff home and recognized fairly quickly that that was working out pretty well. But as Loretta said earlier, we have a huge share of the population of households that really does live from paycheck to paycheck, and with paychecks not coming in, they're extremely vulnerable. In general, bankruptcies are a lagging indicator. It takes a while to get into serious enough trouble to file for bankruptcy, and then when the economy recovers, it takes a while for folks to get back on their feet. So I do expect to see a huge wave.
Well, and you mentioned people. Oh, please, Eleanor, go ahead.
Yeah, just to piggyback on what a little bit, we actually talked to a firm that does liquidation assessments so we can sort of get the front end of that leading indicator or that lagging indicator. And they're seeing, you know, where they would typically be doing 10 liquidation assessments in a normal year, they're doing 8 to 10 a week. So there are definitely a lot of companies that may not right now be filing for bankruptcy or, you know, thinking of winding things down, but they see it coming and are trying to figure out sort of what their options are and what things might look like.
Wow. And we've seen, too, people shifting their businesses, closing up shop, like Tiger Tree, for instance, which was in the Short North for years, closing their in-person store and instead moving to online, saying we don't know when we'll be back in a physical space. Could this be a perma-shift away from brick and mortar?
It sure could be. I think we're going to see a whole number of shifts like that. Online shopping, online business, working from home, which certainly redefines the idea of a corporate headquarters and attracting people to that headquarters to work. Now you can hire your employees from anywhere.
That's an interesting question.
We've heard
please
from,
go, Eleanor.
Yeah, I'm just sorry. But we've heard from, you know, a lot of companies that are now looking at kind of hybrid models of we need a smaller office presence or, you know, no office presence. Earlier in the pandemic, Nationwide announced that it was going to close several offices elsewhere in the country and just have those employees be working remotely. You know, as of right now, they still intend to have this massive headquarters in Columbus that eventually people will be working at again. But they're clearly thinking about how do things look different in the future here.
Well, and that makes me wonder whether Columbus might look totally different 10 years from now. If it's not so important where your headquarters is, you know, does it matter that we're an insurance hub, for instance?
I think it'll always matter. There will always be a need for centers of business operations. They're likely not to be as large. I am concerned about the commercial real estate market, both office and retail. We talked about retail earlier, but there is always going to be a need for a base of operations of some sort.
Looking at the real estate market on the residential side, we are actually seeing more homes being built. How is that having an impact here in Ohio?
Well, the construction employment has declined, and it's declined more than average in central Ohio. But I'm sitting in a house that's 3 months old, and there's an entire neighborhood going up around us. So I think what's happened is that the inventory of existing houses was so small and interest rates were so low that people turned to new builds as the only feasible solution to get a house.
Eleanor, we're still seeing rents go up, though, right now. Is that so?
Yeah, we are. We just actually saw a report that Columbus has some of the fastest rising rents in the area, which I think some of those same sort of, not so much inventory, but people trying to, you know, people pressed pause on a lot of things in the spring when we were truly shut down. And so we're seeing sort of building accelerate on that front and also the costs go up. But I do think there's a question that a lot of developers are looking at is the way that the pandemic is changing what people are looking for from a living perspective.
Oh.
Are we going to see people looking to be more in the suburbs? And, you know, some of us millennials who have been eager to be in dense urban housing start to rethink some of that. So the long-term impact on housing trends may change a lot of this, you know, coming into these apartment buildings in the core. A couple of months and years out.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective. My partner has an apartment close to downtown because that's where his work was. And now he's been working from home and will be for the foreseeable future. It doesn't really matter where the location is anymore.
Mm-hmm. And if you're working from home for months and months on end, that 600-foot micro apartment might get a little bit tight.
No kidding.
Exactly.
Well, Bill, I'm curious, looking a little bit more broadly about consumer confidence, because I can't, for instance, imagine even buying a plane ticket or making any sort of long-term investment, no matter how secure my job is. How are you looking at that question?
Well, the big indicator that I track, watch like a hawk, as I have for years, is the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index. And that has absolutely crashed. It came back a little bit in June, but in July, it fell back again, just as the epidemic came roaring back in parts of the country. But I think we tend to de-emphasize more than we should the psychological aspect.
Mm.
We are still locked down. We do not go out except when we absolutely have to, because we're older and we're in a vulnerable population. And I think there will be a lot of people who are scared enough of the virus that their behavior is going to change for the foreseeable future. And that has implications, of course, for broad swaths of the economy.
Yeah, we'll have to see how this impacts our long-term behavior and our long-term habits. Bill Lafayette, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Well, thank you, Claire.
Bill Lafayette is the owner of Regionomics, a consulting firm in Columbus focused on community-level economic and workforce issues. And Eleanor Kennedy, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Eleanor is the assistant managing editor at Columbus Business First. You've been listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Claire Roth in for Ann this week. The All Sides staff includes producer Aaron Esma and Matthew Rand and our intern Atia Toure. Thank you very much to Scott Good for board operation today. If you'd like to reach us, tweet us on Twitter at WOSU All Sides. I'm there as well at Claire Alice Roth. Plus, you can always send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. This is 89.7 NPR News.